Beginning when he was 5 years old and having undergone surgery to remove two polyps from his vocal cords, Najari Jackson began to learn how to give back to others. This lesson came quickly and easily, and Najari has spent the last 15 years giving back and having such a positive impact that despite facing a mountain of physical and mental anguish, he was one of 15 young pediatric cancer patients who was highlighted in Dick Vitale's book, Until My Last Breath, Fighting Cancer with My Young Heroes. Najari will talk about his incredible journey today, and I hope that you will enjoy this podcast. When he was 5 years old, Najari Jackson began his medical odyssey by having two polyps removed from his vocal cords. Now, he is a 21-year-old graduate from the University of Florida with a master's degree in sports management and sports law. Today, I have the honor of speaking with this incredibly accomplished young man who began to give back to others in need after his vocal cord surgery, and has been doing so at breakneck speed ever since. So much so that he is one of the featured, and I'll quote, young heroes in a book written by the college basketball legend Dick Vitale called Until My Last Breath, Fighting Cancer with My Young Heroes. And it is now my pleasure to introduce Najari to my audience and welcome him to my podcast. Thank you very much for taking the time to join me. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much. Thank you to have. Happy to be here.
Now, my first question to you would be to ask about your vocal cord surgery when you had the polyps removed. Now, I realize you were 5 years old at the time, so I would not think that you would remember the surgery itself. But was this surgery a prelude to the autoimmune disease that you developed, or had your family already been informed that your surgery was an effect from the autoimmune disease that was already in place?
No, we didn't really know much about what it was. And, like I said, I was a kid, so I didn't know the severity of it. But I think we kind of knew that it was the start of something. I wasn't sure exactly like, okay, yeah, this is autoimmune disease. And I guess the doctors didn't either. But a few years later, we kind of really toned it in and figured out what was going on.
So pretty much this autoimmune disease that you have has been the trigger for all of the medical things that we're going to talk about. Would that be a correct statement?
Yeah, pretty much. It sounds kind of, I guess, crazy, but sometimes my body, my immune system is a little too aggressive, and it oftentimes can fight off the bad things like it's supposed to, but it also can fight off some of the good things as well. And that's where some of the problems come in. So it's one of those concepts where it's like, oh, my immune system is working. It's doing what it's supposed to do, but it's kind of putting in overtime and messing stuff up in the process.
Now, I need to ask about this specific disease. As you just mentioned, it attacks good cells and it attacks bad cells, and it sounds like it can go haywire at any time. Besides the two growths that you had removed from your vocal cords, you've had a large tumor removed from your left arm. You've had other surgeries, a bone marrow transplant, and recently had an enlarged lymph node on the side of your neck. And you've also had chemotherapy and immunotherapy given to you. Can you talk about some of these health issues and perhaps others that you've had to deal with over the last 15 years or so?
Yeah, I think I definitely kind of got a sense of how serious these things were as I got older. As a kid, five, six, seven, I knew something was wrong. And, as a kid, you're just kind of focused on like how much school you get to miss and things like that. So, kind of finding out a little bit more, it was kind of heartbreaking in a sense, because when my doctor explained it to me that my body is kind of damaging itself, you know, that's like a hard concept to grasp. And, you know, medicine has definitely advanced a lot since then. So I feel, you know, over the years, I felt a lot better about it. But, you know, that was just one of those concepts that just didn't make sense to me. And, you know, I had the small polyps removed from my vocal cords, and then, you know, a tumor removed from my elbow. And, you know, I even just had a few surgeries over the past few years as a result of this autoimmune disease and just some complications from it. You know, we found out I had juvenile idiopathic arthritis, which, you know, it may just be my ignorance, but I thought, you know, only older people could get arthritis, but I guess not. Yeah, it's just kind of been a journey over the years with my mom. And, you know, you try to stay positive, but, you know, some days are definitely harder than others. Sometimes you feel like, oh God, like I can't catch a break, but, you know, I've pushed this far. So.
Well, saying you pushed this far is an understatement. Because what you've done is you've had to fight through so many things over the pretty much your whole life, basically from the time you were 5 years old. Now, your compassion for others in need showed up very early in your life. And the trigger seemed to be that before your vocal cord surgery, a nurse gave you a Clifford the Big Red Dog stuffed animal, which comforted you. After your surgery, you encountered a little boy named Bryce, who was on his way in for surgery of some type as well. What did you do when you saw Bryce? What was his reaction to it? And was it just after that experience that you told your mom that, and I'll quote, "Mom, I think I can do that for more kids"?
Yeah. You know, obviously, as a little kid going into surgery, you're terrified. And, when the nurse did give me the stuffed animal, the dog, I felt much more at ease and at peace. And I knew, like, okay, this is going to help me out. I'm going to be able to see my mom in a few hours. I'm going to go home, whatever. And I saw Bryce, and, you know, our my parents and his parents kind of, you know, started chatting, and we found out more about how serious his condition was and everything like that. And, you know, I wasn't allowed to, like, you know, see him and interact with him just due to the, you know, medical restrictions and stuff like that. But, you know, I knew that, okay, he's in a lot worse situation than I'm in. I get to go home and, you know, lay on the couch and, you know, watch TV and stuff. He's going to be here. And, you know, it's a much more stressful situation. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go home and play with all my toys and stuffed animals and stuff like that. You know, he's not going to be able to do that. So I left it with him because I felt like, okay, well, this brought me some type of comfort and joy and, you know, a calm sense of mind. So I know he definitely needs that right now. And it was one of those things where I didn't really, you know what community service was. I kind of just, you know, did what felt right in my heart, and, you know, it felt good. And I figured, I was like, okay, well, I see, you know, how much comfort this brought me. And, you know, I know there's kids going through a lot worse situations. So if this, you know, just small act, small stuffed animal can provide me with this much comfort, I mean, I can only assume it could do the same thing for so many others. And that's kind of just where it started.
Well, again, this was one act of kindness. And if it had been the only act you did, that would be great. But the fact of the matter is, a few years later, it motivated you, certainly in some respect, as you started Pajama Buddies, which is a program to give stuffed animals that you have purchased with the help of your mom and deliver them to Shriners Hospital in Tampa and many other places. Can you talk about, I guess, I don't know if you'd consider it a nonprofit, but whatever it is, it certainly is with the best of intentions and the best of success.
Yeah. When I, at the time, I was on the swim team. I was a competitive swimmer, and I was probably 7 and maybe 8. And, you know, we had this sharp pain in my elbow. And like I said, I was swimming, so I just assumed, okay, it's probably just a tweak, whatever. And eventually I got it checked out, and, you know, they found a small tumor in my arm. And so the more time I spent at the hospital, you know, my family would send me things and everything like that. And I was like, you know what? That feeling I got from, you know, helping out Bryce a few years back, I wanted, like I said, I really wanted to continue that. So I came up with Pajama Buddy Voyage, and it kind of just took off. And to this day, it still kind of feels surreal because of how much support I had, because, you know, this wasn't a time where social media was existent, but it obviously wasn't as big as it is today. So it kind of just started off, you know, family members, my mom, word of mouth and everything like that. And it started off really small, and, you know, it just spread so quick. You know, I had people messaging me and my mom on Facebook, and how can I help and everything like that. And at first we were donating like Rubik's cubes and coloring books and, you know, just very, you know, simple stuff that can keep somebody entertained and, you know, things like that in the hospital. But it just, people started donating iPads and Nooks and Kindles and everything like that. And, you know, I had this one couple from, I think maybe Mississippi or, you know, somewhere like that, who drove to my house in Florida and dropped off like 8 garbage bags full of stuff to donate. And it's like little things like that is, I don't know, not little things, but things like that are just, they don't feel real, because you're like, okay, I don't even know these people, but they took their own time and money and, you know, probably time off work to come and help my cause, and they don't even know me. And, you know, it feels good in situations like that, because it's like, okay, well, I have this passion and, you know, I want to do everything I can to help others. And when I see others, you know, pitch in to help me help others, it kind of all comes full circle. And, you know, it's just one of those feelings that, you know, can never really be like duplicated. It's just such a wholesome feeling. And I feel like in the world, and, you know, we've had some crazy things going on over the past few years, it's kind of just, it's nice to know that there are other people with similar goals and intentions.
Now, to go along with Pajama Buddies, you also started Pajama Drab Bags, which was done to brighten up the atmosphere and environment for young patients receiving pediatric cancer treatment. I'm sure treatments for other things. Was that pretty much a parallel situation as far as what you wanted to do? But of course, it's with different items that you deliver to these hospitals.
Yeah, it all kind of started off with just the stuffed animal. The stuffed animal was kind of what started this drive for me. So we only donated, you know, stuffed animals, dogs, cats, bears, everything like that. And as it kind of grew and, you know, word of mouth, like I said, and everything, I was like, okay, well, people are donating a lot of stuff. I can't, you know, we had these little custom drawstring bags made up and everything like that. And I had the Pajama Buddy logo, heat pressed onto it, and we started packing them. You know, we had different colors for different age groups and, you know, everything like that. So it turned into like a full system, really. And like I said, at first, it just started as, you know, kind of some of our leisurely activity that I wanted to do to, you know, bring some smiles to people's faces. And then it kind of turned into a whole organization when I got people involved and helping me out, and, you know, people at my mom's job telling other people, and, you know, posts on Facebook and people calling me that I don't even know, just telling me how much they want to help. How can I help? And it took off. And it's just, I don't want to say this is, you know, nothing crazy, because I feel like it is, but to know that like this all just started off at, you know, with just like a teddy bear, a dog, like it's just crazy to look back at.
Well, what's crazy is the incredible effort that you've done to brighten up so many lives of these kids who certainly need it so much. Now, how old were you at the time when you were really, I know that it's been, I believe, over 4,000 stuffed animals dropped off along with all the other items. Was this like in your early teenage years or even earlier than that?
I was probably just around 9 or 10 when this all started, because it was shortly after I found out about everything with my arm. So I probably said I was 9 or 10, yeah. And then it just kind of going since then.
Now, you received, as I mentioned before, so many awards for your incredibly compassionate good deeds, which we're going to talk about a little more. But I'd first like to ask you about your mom and what values she must have instilled in you at a very young age, and values that you have certainly taken with you as time goes on. I mean, what type of an incredible influence has she been for you?
Yeah, I definitely would not be here, or you know, where I am today, or the man I am today, without my mom. She's kind of always been by my side through everything, and I know that when I was going through all my medical stuff, I think you know she probably had a harder time than I was just seeing her. And at first, I didn't understand. I was like, you know, I was a kid, and I was like, "Mom, like, you know, you're not sick. Like, what's wrong?" Da da da. But just seeing how much it affected her really showed me, like, God, like, you know, she really loves me. She really wants the best for me. And, you know, driving up to Gainesville for my doctor's appointments and taking off work and everything like that, it just showed me how much she was willing to do for me. And, you know, even when I had these, you know, crazy ideas, like, you know, Mom, I want to buy a bunch of stuffed animals and take them to the hospital, you know, as a parent, that probably catches you off guard, but, you know, she didn't hesitate at all to jump in and help me fulfill basically every dream I ever had. And, you know, seeing how hard she worked to get to the position she's in today with her career and her education and everything, it just really motivated me because, you know, I've always kind of just wanted to be just like her. Maybe not the same field, but just the drive she has, the passion she has, the love she's, you know, expressed to me over the years, like, it's just unmatched. And, you know, I'd give anything just to be able to duplicate like half the features she has. And so I definitely say she's my best friend and, you know, the reason I am who I am today.
That's so great to hear. I have to ask you, did the polyps or the tumor in your elbow or the enlarged lymph node, did any of those turn into a specific pediatric cancer? I know you've had chemo and immunotherapy, or have those just been given to you for protection in case something happened? And it's really, the whole thing is just really an offshoot of the autoimmune disease.
Yeah, the polyps in my vocal cords kind of started it all. They started off as little polyps and, you know, over the course turned into small tumors, but we were able to kind of catch it in time before it got too serious. But the one on my arm, on my left arm, did get like to that full-blown stage. And all the you know, immunotherapy and everything like that was kind of meant to essentially like terminate it, I guess. And the autoimmune disease kind of keeps us on the edge of our seats every few years, because it is one of those things where whenever something hurts, or I can't tell, like, okay, is this arthritis? Is this, you know, something happening? Especially, you know, playing sports over the years, it was always very scary. And, you know, I feel like our doctors probably thought we were really paranoid, but, you know, probably rightfully so, because last time I had a pain, you know, it turned out to be what it was. So I definitely think autoimmune played a big part in it. Like I said, it's one of those things that sucks to hear that your body is doing what it's supposed to do a little too much to where it's harming you. Like, you know, I still think that's a crazy concept to grasp. So it's one of those things, like I said, keeps me on the edge of my seat and, you know, keeps things interesting.
Now, you mentioned that you're an athlete. You're not just an athlete, you're an outstanding athlete. You play high school football, lacrosse. You were able to swim at a junior Olympic level. How important was being able to participate at a high level in sports? How much did it mean to you? And what was your reaction when you were told by a doctor that you would never be able to play competitive sports again?
I was honestly heartbroken. I feel like as a kid, I, you know, or since a kid, I've always kind of been, you know, in love with sports and, you know, super competitive, whether it was swim practice or PE or football, you know, it was always just very fun. And I felt like sports was that one thing that where you like genuinely just forget about the world and just have fun with your friends or teammates or whatever. And hearing that I'd never be able to do that again, it was like a blow to the gut, kind of, because like I said, you know, as a kid, I didn't really realize what was going on, at you know, to its full extent. But that kind of really stuck with me because, you know, I kind of have been raised like, okay, never say never, never say I can't do anything and things like that. So when I have a doctor, and in my eyes, a doctor is supposed to provide hope and excitement and, you know, joy and determination and all these things, you know, it kind of just, probably not intentionally, but kind of shot down one of my dreams. It was like, dang, you know, that hurt. And I wouldn't wish that feeling on anybody. And, you know, my mom and I, you know, big into our faith, and it kind of just really started praying and locking in and, you know, trying to get God to give us some type of hope. And, you know, when you hear something like that, it's not just something you can just brush off and, oh, whatever, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Cause in my head, it's like, he definitely knows what he's talking about, but I didn't really want to accept that for an answer. And so over the years, you know, as I kept getting, you know, stronger and, you know, healthier and things like that, you know, I don't want to say like, I told you so or whatever in a petty way, but in a sense, like, I told you I was going to be able to do this again. And, you know, I was determined to prove this doctor wrong. And I mean, obviously I did. So that was kind of one of those kind of victorious feelings.
I think you're the type of person that if someone tells you can't do something, your response is, oh, yes, I can. Watch me, which is what.
Yeah.
What led to your mission to put defibrillators in schools and youth sports facilities, which ultimately led to you receiving the Eagle Scout of the Year Award?
Yeah, my family, we have a not so great history of heart problems. You know, my mom's twin sister and my cousin, they both have, you know, internal defibrillators, and, you know, just family lineage over the years just hasn't had the best luck. So I kind of always knew about it. My mom's in the cardiac field over at the Veterans Hospital here in Tampa. So I kind of always been familiar with it, just, you know, due to those things. And, you know, one of the swim meets, somebody experienced sudden cardiac arrest, and it just was honestly traumatizing because it felt so random and so sudden. And you think like, oh, I'm young, I'm 15, I'm 14, I'm healthy. And it's one of those things where it could happen at literally any point to anybody, and you never know. And, you know, it kind of upset me in a way because these, you know, sports physicals, they're pretty much just like, okay, touch your toes. Okay, is there any pain here? And I feel like they're very, like, you know, simplistic. And I feel like they don't really get to the root of, you know, the serious stuff. And so I wanted to make sure, okay, in case of an emergency, every sports organization or every sports field or park or school has, you know, an AED, which, you know, the probably one of the best safety precautions you can have in a situation like that. And I was like, okay, well, I did it for my school. And I was like, you know what? I could, just like Pajama Buddies, like, you know, started off as like a random act. And I was like, you know, I could keep doing this. And so that's kind of how it turned into my Eagle Scout project.
Now, you raised $1,500 by selling candy bars to help Haley Bankhead, who was suffering from stage 4 cancer. You also raised $1,000 to fund a friendship and prayer garden at your school, where you were a straight A student, which should surprise no one. Please, can you talk about these two acts of kindness and what type of reactions you received from Haley's family and from your school?
Yeah, it was very, I would say, emotional. It was one of those situations where not a lot of words were said, but so much was being said at the same time, because, you know, I know Haley's, you know, she had a much much worse battle than I did, and just seeing how strong she is, and you know, over the years, and you know, her grow up and where she is today, like, it's one of those things. Again, it just feels like a miracle, because you know, I feel like cancer and all these medical treatments, chemo or an immuno and radiation therapy, you know, it's one of those things where, as much as you try not to, you can't help but think about negatives. And you know, just seeing us come out of this and seeing so many people on the world come out of it, it's just, it's a miracle. And I feel like it really brought my mom and I closer to God. So I was like, I'd love to put a prayer garden at my school. So anybody who feels, you know, like they can't talk to anybody, or they have a hard time expressing their feelings, you know, they have somewhere to go and, you know, kind of feel like they have a, you know, safe space in a sense. And that's kind of how that took off.
Now, you've also authored, I believe, 4 books. Can
yes,
you talk
sir.
About those books and your reason for writing them?
I've always been a writer. It's probably one of my favorite subjects growing up. And you know, I write a lot in my free time. And so I kind of started off as a leisurely activity. And I'd write these, you know, funny, cute little kid stories. And I forgot who it was, but someone suggested, like, oh my God, you're going to be an author growing up. And I was like, probably I could do that. And kind of just took off from there. And so I just got to writing, and I met with a publisher, and it kind of went from there. And for me, it was just something fun and, you know, bring a smile to my face, maybe a few laughs. But I was like, okay, this made me laugh and feel good. And, you know, I hope it can do the same thing for others as well. And it was one of those things where some of the stuff I write about, you know, only a certain person, you know, in, you know, a medical emergency or medical situation going through some of the same things I went through would understand. And so I was like, okay, I want to be able to reach, you know, people who can, you know, probably see the behind the scenes things that they, you know, nobody really knows, and see, okay, what's the mental side of these things? Like, what's the emotional and physical sides of these things? And, you know, I would say some of my writings are a little bit more serious, a little bit more, you know, deep or anything like that. But some of them are also really silly and, you know, just simply just fun and playful.
Again, you have so many talents, and that sounds like it's right up there with everyone that you've explained so far. Now, I'm going to miss some of the awards that you have won, so I'm going to try to at least highlight as many as I can think of. And these would include the Congressional Bronze Medal for Community Service, first place in the St. Joseph's Children's Hospital Kids Heroes Award, Scholar Awards from Coca-Cola, Foot Locker, NBC Universal, and the Bob Graham Center for Public Service Scholar. That becomes especially poignant when considering that the former Florida governor and senator just passed away 3 days before we recorded this podcast. How much do these awards and the many others you have received mean to you?
They mean the world to me. You know, I feel like as honored as I am to be, you know, nominated and winning these things and being a part of it, you know, I never wanted to seem like I'm doing this for the awards or for the recognition. You know, obviously, like I said, I'm honored to be in these situations, and you know, it's always fun being up on stage, you know, giving speeches or accepting awards and just meeting great people along the way. But you know, it's one of those things to where if it was, you know, simply just taken away, it wouldn't affect me. I feel like I would still be doing, you know, the same acts and everything that I love, you know, even if I, you know, was never recognized or honored, you know. And it's something I'm appreciative for, because like I said, it put me in contact with some great people, you know, that I, you know, I still probably talk to over the years. But I think for me, it was always just deeper or more personal than trophies or anything like that. But you know, like I said, I wouldn't be where I am today without any of it. So I'm forever grateful for that.
I'd like to now talk about your relationship with Dick Vitale, who was so well known from his college basketball TV analyst work, and perhaps less well known for the very important role he plays in this pediatric cancer fight in so many ways. How did you first meet Dick, and how much does he mean to you and mean to all of these kids who he rightfully calls his young heroes?
I think this will now be my 9th, maybe 10th year working with Dick Vitale. I guess someone from his camp heard one of my stories and invited me to the gala. And ever since then, I felt like just he was family. You know, he's this vibrant energy. And it's, you know, I think as kids, we all assume like the older somebody gets, you know, they're quieter and, you know, don't do as much and things. That's just kind of like how as a kid I envisioned adults, but just seeing how energetic and passionate he is, you know, for people he probably doesn't even know or, you know, may not have the chance to meet. It's just a beautiful thing because, you know, I know going through everything I went through, obviously I had my family and close friends who cared about me and things like that, but, you know, nobody was doing what he does. And, you know, I know obviously he's known mostly for his basketball and coaching career and everything like that. But I just think he's just a GOAT. He's the, you know, greatest human being that, you know, probably I've ever met. And knowing that I'm allowed to, you know, work with him and, you know, basically be a part of his family is a blessing. I've never experienced so much love and passion for a cause, you know, working with him. And, you know, it sucks because I think only 3 or 4% of every dollar raised goes to pediatrics. And it's, you know, it breaks my heart because, like I said, these kids, they're, you know, the next generation, they're the future. And it just, I know I can only imagine what my mom was going through, you know, finding out the news about me. And I know there's people out there with worse conditions and worse diagnoses and things like that. And just, I wouldn't wish that on anybody. So I feel like if I can do one thing a day or one thing a month or just anything to help, you know, never, you know, a parent never have to hear that their kid has cancer again, I would do it in a heartbeat. And that's basically what Dick Vitale does day in, day out. And just seeing, like I said, how loving and energetic and passionate, especially at 82, 83 years old, it's just such a beautiful thing because he just cares so much. And, you know, it's just something I hope to, you know, emulate one day. He's just such a role model to me, and I've been blessed to be, you know, have him in my circle over the years.
You use the term that he had vibrant energy, which to me is like the perfect metaphor for what he has done his entire public life and life, obviously, behind the scenes. Now, he's called you a diaper dandy scholar, which is everybody who follows college basketball knows what a compliment that would be. It's really a compliment of the highest order. And he describes you in this manner, and I'll quote again, all that giving and achieving in the face of tremendous mental and physical anguish. Of course, he's talking about you. I'd like your reaction to that. And how spot on is he when he talks about the tremendous mental and physical anguish that you've had to endure over the past decade and a half?
Just knowing that I think somebody of, you know, that caliber and status and everything like that, you know, talks about me in that way, just it makes me feel really good. And I guess it makes me proud, just knowing that I'm making him proud. And, you know, making my family and everybody proud. And I definitely think he's spot on. You know, I guess I often don't talk about it too much because I don't want to make it seem like a pity party or anything like that. But my mom and I have definitely had our fair share of, I guess, emotional distress over the years. So, you know, I try not to let that define me or, you know, get me too off track for too long. I will admit some days is harder than or are harder than others, But I know, life's gonna do its thing, and I just have to try to get up each and every day and control the things that I can control, and just try to stay positive and keep a cool, level-headed mindset, so I can just keep pushing and keep doing what I do best on my daily basis, and try to help others.
He calls you the closer, which is another high compliment, by the way, in his book. Now, you talk about all the help that he's given you through his galas, and you were also named his all-courageous team, which is another high honor. Is it fair to say that you and his other heroes have inspired him in his own cancer battle?
I would say 100%. I don't know if ironic is the word, but knowing how hard he fights for essentially strangers and their cancer journeys, and how much money he's raised for other people like myself around the world, it's just such a beautiful thing. And then to hear that he, came down with the same thing that he's fighting against, it's one of those situations like, my God, there's no way. And, just seeing how much he was there for us. And like I said, at the time, we weren't even, super, super close. And he was still calling me, checking on me, calling my mom, sending us emails, just, making sure, and just seeing how much he cares about, my mom and I, and, we're not even related to him by blood or anything. It was such a beautiful thing. And so I know that him being able to see all of our stories and, how hard we fought and, where we are today. And, this person said, I'd never run again or walk again. And I played college football, little stories like that. It's like, I know for a fact, those things motivated him. And we know that, okay, he did 110% for us while we were, not doing great. We want to be able to give him 120%, because I feel like if anybody deserves that, love and energy, it's got to be him.
Not too long ago, you were at Walgreens picking up some medication, and you bent down to grab something and your leg buckled. You felt as if you were paralyzed. You felt embarrassed, and you felt like giving up. How long did this feeling last? And what were the words that went through your mind to get you through this moment or moments afterwards?
Yeah, I would definitely say embarrassed was probably the first feeling that kind of came over me. Obviously, if you're injured or hurt, it's obviously kind of like a nuisance and maybe even an inconvenience. But, in that moment, I was like, dang, like, I can't even do my daily everyday tasks without some type of complication. And in that moment, I was really, I would say, frustrated and annoyed. And, I always try to tell myself, like, okay, it could always be worse. And so I knew that, and I was thinking, like, okay, well, there's people who, due to their health or illness or whatever, probably haven't been to Walgreens and X amount of months and things like that. So I just tried to stay positive and stay calm and know that, like, okay, I can get up, I can do this. And no, I just need to get back home and we can figure this out a little later. And all I could think about was Dick Bites Out. And I was like, don't give up. Don't ever give up. That's, what he preaches day in, day out, at the galas, social media, and his everyday life. That's just, whenever I think of Dick Vitale, I think of that phrase. And I think it's probably a random track for my mind to go down in that moment in a Walgreens. But all I could think about was, Dick Vitale's speeches and his energy. And I was like, okay, well, he said, I can't give up. Don't ever give up. So I'm not going to start now.
Well, it certainly turned out to be a very good thing that you thought of, because as history has proven, you certainly didn't give up at that time, nor will you if anything like that ever happens again. Now, his book highlights 15 young pediatric cancer survivors and what they've been through, including Sadie Keller and Cole Eicher, who I've had the pleasure of interviewing on this podcast. And I've also interviewed a true icon as a parent in the pediatric cancer community in Cole's mother, Laura. Have you been able to connect with any of your fellow interviewees? And if so, what has it been like for you to be able to have that experience?
Yeah, I would say Cole and I are probably the closest. It was kind of one of those full circle moments because we met at the gala. You know, we really became close. Our mom started talking and everything like that. We're both kind of fairly close in proximity in terms of where we live. And it was one of those things where it sucks under, you know, circumstances that we met, that we both had to go through, you know, these experiences in order for us to have cross paths. But it's one of those relationships that I feel like, you know, I could, you know, see myself having 20, 30 years down the line. And, you know, honestly, I probably wouldn't have it any other way because the people that I've met over the course of this journey, I hope to take with me for years and years. And Cole and I are really close. The whole Courageous team, we're pretty close. But I was working with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and I was just walking down the street at one of our events and I was like, Cole? And turns out we were both working with the Buccaneers at the time. So, you know, little moments like that is just, I feel like it can't be anything short of a miracle. You know, there's some things, okay, maybe it's a coincidence, but things like that, those little beautiful, small interactions just kind of make it all worth it. And it's nice because, you know, him and I have been through similar experiences. So it's, you know, we can bond on probably a different level than, you know, me and some of my other friends. And so just knowing that, you know, we're there for each other and really anybody on the All Courageous team can reach out and, you know, we are never going to fully understand what they went through or where they're coming from. But I think, you know, we have a much better understanding than, you know, the average Joe. So just having that, you know, tight knit community and brother / sisterhood, you know, it's just it's a nice thing to know that it's always there.
No, he's just a tremendous young man. I believe he was diagnosed with his medulloblastoma. He was 12 years old, I believe, in 2012. So it's been something like 12 years since, and he has accomplished so many things as you have, and to be able to, you know, have a close friend who's done so much in his arena as you have done in your arena must be very, very gratifying. And you certainly picked a great friend, and he certainly picked a great friend in you. There's no doubt about that. Besides Dick and your mom, I'm interested to know who one or two of the most influential people have been in your amazing life to date. And would one of them be Dr. Ernesto Jimenez from the James Haley Veterans Hospital in Tampa?
I would say so. Dr. Jimenez, met him when I was really young. My mom, you know, she moved us down to Tampa for a job opportunity. And I forgot what it was for, but I kind of interviewed him for an essay I was writing. And he told me about, you know, how he moved to America and his upbringing and, you know, some of the adversity and struggles he had to face over the years and things like that. And, you know, at such a young age, I felt that really impacted me because I knew, okay, well, he went through a lot of adversity as well in a different sense, you know, than what I went through, but he still, you know, made a name for himself and, you know, came out successful and is, you know, living the American dream. And, you know, it's just a beautiful stories like that. And, you know, obviously, I never want to compare, contrast like somebody's struggles, but I was like, okay, well, if he can do all these things and, you know, overcome the things he did, I can overcome the, you know, the adversity I went through as well. And so I feel like he kind of, you know, implemented this, you know, positive, you know, never give up, you know, anything's possible sounds, you know, very cliche and everything like that, but he really, you know, that was like one of my first interactions where I felt like, you know what, like, you're right, anything is possible, because, you know, with his story and everything, you would have never thought he, you know, got to the position he's in today. So I would definitely say he's probably one of the most influential besides Dick Lorraine and Miss Lorraine and my mom. The number two spot is hard though. And I feel like everybody's who's come in my life is, you know, impacting me or left an impression on me.
I think what I'll do is I'll answer the question this way, because I'm sure it's a difficult one to. My guess, and I think it's a pretty educated one, is that many people, and you may not understand this or really, I don't know, question it. You shouldn't question it, because I think a lot of people have you as a very influential people in their lives, maybe more than you know about, because you have, you know, the example that you have set has put you in a position, knowing it or not knowing it, as a true mentor. That's just my opinion on that.
I appreciate that. And I hope that you're right. I try to inspire people and just give anybody the slightest bit of hope every day. Like I said, I don't really do it for the recognition or the attention, but if somebody sees me or my story and things like that and can take something positive from it and you know, make them a little bit happier, a little bit more hopeful, you know, so be it. I'd want nothing more.
How important has your attitude been to be able to lead such an accomplished life, despite, as Dick Vitale said, you've had so much mental and physical anguish? How do you become as positive as you have been with what you've had to deal with?
Like I said, I never try to compare or contrast people's struggles or what they're going through, but sometimes you can't help but think about it. You know, I realize, like, hearing some of these other kids' stories and, you know, hearing what some of the other families are going through, it's kind of just like, you know what? It could always be worse. Like, this situation kind of sucks. It may not be ideal. It's not pretty, but, you know, I've seen people in worse situations overcome things. So it's like, okay, how am I going to give up if, you know, for example, Haley Bankhead, she had stage 4 cancer and everything like that. It's like, you know, she beat it and she went on to the middle of high school and everything like that and started a business and, you know, hosted large events at such a young age and things like that. It's like, okay, well, if she didn't give up, I'm not going to give up. And that's not even just in like a medical sense, you know, if it's, you know what, God, I really am not feeling this. I'm not in the mood to get up. And in my head, it's like, okay, well, if 80-something-year-old Dick Vitale can get up and change the world every day, I can get up and do my chores, or you know, I can get up and wash the dishes. And, you know, I kind of just, you know, have that mindset when it comes to everything. And at first it was kind of just, you know, in a medical sense, like, I'm not feeling great, but anything's possible. I'm going to keep fighting and never give up. And it kind of just turned into something I implement in my everyday life. You know, it's, I might not want to go to work. I might be too tired to go to class, you know, things like that. And I always just kind of keep that in the back of my head. Like, okay, I'm here. I'm doing my best to get to where I want to be. And, you know, in certain things, I just have to kind of hype myself up, give myself a little pregame speed to kind of start off the day properly.
You have your sports management and sports law degree, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast. The future would, to me, seem to be unlimited for you. Where do you see yourself career-wise, say, 5 or 10 years from now?
Geez, that's scary. I kind of transitioned my focus since graduating just a little bit. But I got accepted to the International Institute of Prosthetics and Orthotics. And I'll start there in August. And, you know, going through everything I went through with my arms and surgeries on my legs and just kind of meeting people over the years who have, you know, ultimately had to lose their limbs and everything like that, it kind of just felt close to home in a way. And I want to be able to give people, you know, that opportunity of their life back, and you know, given I'm somebody with a lot of history, to say the least, with arm and leg problems. I know how important they can be to just everyday life. So I kind of just fell into that career path accidentally one day, and it's just been something I've been super passionate about. So I'll be in school from August of this year to December of next. And you know, then you have to do a little bit of a residency before you can, you know, fully work at a hospital. So I'd probably say in 5 years, I'm, you know, probably at a hospital and kind of getting my footing in that world. And I guess hopefully opening up my own practice one day.
Well, I think that the when you open your practice, the patients that you're going to be running into will be very happy. I'm sure they're not going to be very happy that they have to come see you because they're injured. But I'm sure that they'll be very happy that you are going to, no matter what, do everything that you can to make make them better. Where can people get in touch with you? Your story's fascinating. What you've done, you know, 21 years old, it is incredible. People might want to learn more about you. So if you can give me just an email address or some place that they might be able to contact you.
Yeah, my email is njthestar. So it's njthestar@gmail.com. And I'm always open to talk, whether it's advice, you just want to catch up, be friends, whatever. I'm open.
Well, as we come to the end of this podcast, I want to congratulate you on the so many things that you've done for people. Again, you really have hardly gotten started, even though you may understand this because you've done so much. There's so much more that I am positive that you're going to do to help mankind in whatever, whether it's the career that you're coming into and everything else. And I want to thank you. I know you're at work now, for taking the time to come onto my show and to talk so beautifully about where you've been and who's helped you, the wonderful friendship that you've created with Dick Vitale, what your mom has done for you and what so many others mean to you. And I want to wish you the best of luck as time goes on.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And you have a good day.
You as well.
I hope that you all appreciated listening to Najari's story and how he has, through both the inspiring Dick Vitale, along with his incredible mom, learned such important values and lessons, as he has already established a great name for himself, with many more years ahead to add to his outstanding accomplishments. This is Mark Levine, and please tune in this Thursday when I will speak with the indomitable Katie Histing, who will discuss her journey with Ewing sarcoma.